Welcome to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, a show about how to break through obstacles that may be holding you back in life or business. And now your host of Breakthrough Thinking, certified master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, business consultant, and CPA, Dave Isaac.
Live from the 1010 Studios in Phoenix, Arizona, you are listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the fourth Tuesday of the month, it must be the real estate panel starring Mr. Chris Gray and, of course, Terry Cass. But Terry is en route, I believe. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
This is great because what a show today. We've expanded. This is a special edition of the real estate panel because we have a very exciting and important show today. We are honored to have three of the candidates running for mayor for the city of Phoenix. And, of course, today, between 2 and 2:40 in studio is none other than Wes Gullett. Hey, Wes, how are you?
How are you doing? It's great to be here on Breakthrough Thinking. That's what we need a little bit at the city of Phoenix. We got to break through the walls, the barriers, and get the economy going again.
Absolutely. This is so exciting because you're a business guy. And, Chris, I know you have some, we both have some questions for Wes. But you want to start off, tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. I am a small businessman. I've been in small business for 15 years. Before that, I was chief of staff to the governor of Arizona. And so I understand how to work with big government organizations. But for the last 15 years, I've been a consultant, and I've worked primarily as a strategic planner to work with corporations, large nonprofits, and organizations to help them better understand how they can be strategically communicate, fit into the community, and at the end of the day, improve their bottom line.
You know, I like that, and Chris, you probably like that too, as far as strategic planning, bringing in more business in the government environment and really run it as much as you can like a business, strategically planning things. I think that's been probably a weakness in most governments. Wes, would you agree?
Well, the city of Phoenix is strategic plan was last updated in 1991.
Oh.
They're working on it right now, but which is a good thing, but it's been since 1991. It's been on the shelf. You can't run an organization as complicated, as complex as the city of Phoenix without having a strategic vision. And we've got to do that because from what we need to do is get our fiscal house in order. We need to understand what we need to do and what we need to do better and how we can laser focus on jobs in the economy because people are desperate for work. That's what they're after, and that's been a big problem in the real estate market.
You know what, Mr. Gullett? And I agree with that. But, you know, before we get into real deep into all that, what I'd like to know, and I'm sure the city of Phoenix would like to know, who you are. Where do you come from? What are your grassroots? What is your, what are your beliefs? How did you get where you are today? Who are you? Whom is the person? Who are we voting on?
Right.
Who
exactly.
are you?
Exactly. You know, I have been in Phoenix for 25 years. I moved here in 1986. I worked for John McCain for 7 years. I ran his state offices here. And when I did that job, it was a very interesting job because we got to reach out to the communities all around the state of Arizona. I've actually been on every paved highway north of the Gila River. And I've traveled all over. My wife would tease me because she said I always kept a fishing pole in my trunk when I would go out on my in my work because I knew a few fishing holes along the way.
Right.
But after that, in 1992, John McCain was reelected to the Senate. Governor Fife Symington asked me to come and be his chief of staff, and I did. And it was a fantastic opportunity, and it was a fascinating experience because back then, everybody said we had a structural deficit. We had a problem. We had to raise taxes. We had to be. We had to increase revenue. And what we thought was, no, let's reduce the size of government, cut taxes, and create economic opportunity.
Wow, what a thought! That's where we're at today again.
Exactly, and that's the same. That's the same issues facing the city of Phoenix. So I've been through it. I know how to do it. I know it's hard. I know there's a lot of pushback from the intrinsic bureaucracy that says, no, we're doing it. We can't do it any different. This is the way we're doing it. And but we can. I know we can. And I've been there and done that, so I know that I've got the tools to do that. Then I went into the private sector. But in terms of the question, I've been married for 18 years to the same woman. We have three children. My oldest daughter is 20. My youngest daughter is 15, and I have a 17-year-old. They're in high school, the 17 and 15-year-olds are in high school. My oldest daughter, who I adopted from Bangladesh, she was born in Mother Teresa's orphanage in Bangladesh and immigrated to the United States, is under, you know, some help from a lot of friends. So, she's at the Culinary Phoenix Art Institute learning how to be a chef in the culinary class. I'm a cook. I love to cook. I'm a gardener. I have a big vegetable garden in my backyard. I grow flowers. I arrange flowers for my wife. I just did it yesterday morning. She was a little steamed at me because I'd fallen down on my flower arranging recently because I've been so focused on being mayor. She said, can you take a time out from being the mayor candidate to, you know, how about some flowers? So picked some zinnias, arranged a nice bouquet for her. That's the kind of guy I am. I like to be in the soil. I like to fish. I like to be with my buddies. I love football. I'm a big Iowa Hawkeye football fan. I went to the University of Iowa. Saturdays, I watch Iowa football. Sundays, I watch Cardinal football, and have been a season ticket holder since 1988 with the Cardinals. And I love so I love football. I love gardening. I love fishing. And I love my family and my kids. And this last week has been a little tough, and the on our family because of this whole business with the robocall stuff.
And I heard about that. And I was shocked.
Well, it's just unfortunate, and I'm sorry I brought it up. But it has been, you know, this has been a great opportunity though to run in for mayor because I have been in every neighborhood in the city. I've knocked on doors. I've wandered the streets. I've hassled people at the libraries. I actually have seen how our library system is working and doing a good job. And it's been a wonderful opportunity for me because, especially from a real estate perspective, we have some fantastic neighborhoods that are really undersold and underappreciated, I think, by the leadership of the community. We need to enhance and celebrate those neighborhoods. I was telling somebody the other day, man, here's a great value proposition. The Washington Park neighborhood, west of 19th Avenue, north of Bethany Home. This is a little neighborhood that is well-kept. It is. The values have unfortunately plummeted. It's got one problem, crime, at least statistically speaking. Because when you look at the crime map, there's a big red dot on it. And the most intense crime spot in the city is 19th Avenue and Bethany. So I was talking to those people, and they said, the reason why is because all the crimes are reported at Baptist Hospital. And so that's where the crimes are reported, so this big red dot is right there. They don't happen there. They're just reported there.
Oh, geez.
So you've got this great little neighborhood and great and fantastic people, and they're just being held down by a snafu in a process. And it's unfortunate.
That's great. You have great awareness. I do want to clarify something. When I said I'm shocked on the robocall, it was meant that someone would even put that out.
Yeah. No, I know.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that.
I'm sorry I didn't mean to bring it up.
No, that's okay because that belongs nowhere. It's just sad that the people, whoever was responsible, are resorting to untruths and just malicious behavior.
Well, I love my wife and I love my kids and they're awesome. And it is what it is. And politics, I've been in politics a long time. I know it's rough and tumble. I know that people are going to besmirch you. And, today Greg Stanton was saying I needed to recuse myself on a vote that I did when I was in the Planning Commission, which is not true, and I didn't need to do it. Those are the kinds of things that I know are going to come, that we're going to talk about.
Right.
And we're going to talk about issues that he has as well. And those are fair game. And we need to have a full discussion of the issues, because Phoenix has got some significant issues that we need to take care of. This food tax, for example.
Right.
The idea that we're going to balance our budget by taxing the people who can least afford it for food doesn't seem right to me.
And I guess then that was kind of one of the other questions I had is how can everybody runs around going, what are you going to do to create jobs?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, just being an average Joe, what leads people to think that you being mayor or any one person being mayor can all of a sudden create jobs?
Right. That's a great question, because politicians and governments don't create jobs, unless you're right. Printing money like Obama. Mm. So what we can do is get out of the way. We can lower the costs and the friction to get small businesses started and moving because we charge permit fees and at the wrong time, when people can least afford it, at the beginning. Or when they want to expand their
right,
business.
Right.
What we need to do is eliminate those fees or make them as low as possible.
Get them in the door.
Right. Get them in the door creating jobs.
Right.
And then people say, well, how do you do that? How do you pay for that? Well, we've got plenty of money. We've got plenty of money to reduce those fees and those taxes like the food tax. It's just all rearranged wrong. Mm-hmm. So we've got to go in and rearrange it. And I have a government reform plan that I sent out an email on yesterday, and it's on my website. It's been there for a couple months. That will restructure the way we do government and save us $50 million. So with that $50 million, and that's just the general fund, that savings can be used to repeal the food tax, lower those permit fees, and then reinvest in important things that we've had to cut back on, like after-school programs for at-risk youth, which I think are really important because those are the kids that need it most, and we can help them be better prepared to graduate from high school and raise the graduation rates, get our statistics up in our urban, in our inner cities, schools. If we can do that, that's going to attract people to Phoenix as well. But we have to have a more creative, much more entrepreneurial attitude about the city of Phoenix, driven by performance-based pay. So if you perform, you get paid. I believe that that works in my business, and I believe that it can work in the city of Phoenix, that if you're going above and beyond, we're going to reward you.
You know, people that have children, I mean, what, divorce rate is now, what, 60 or 70% or something crazy? So
67%.
Okay.
First time. Second time marriage is 75%. What's going on there?
Yeah. Well, so in that, the point was is that, so there are a lot of single moms and single dads, okay?
Right.
And with the economy kind of crashing down a little bit, wages are actually decreasing instead of increasing. So there's a lot of children staying home alone
right.
because parents can't afford
hundreds or thousands a
month, whatever. Because if they do that, they may as well stay home, and then they're on welfare. But
right.
it's like, well, wait a minute, I don't want to be.
Yeah.
Well, what is it, you know?
And that's where these after-school programs can come in and be so effective, because they help give some structure to the kids. So they're not just home watching TV or doing whatever they're doing. At my house, we worry about that with teenage kids. And we're able to have somebody there with them if we can't be. Kids need structure.
Mm-hmm.
And these after-school programs, we had 100 of them, and we cut it to 30, and they talked about getting rid of those 30. 100 can facilitate a lot of kids, and it can make a huge difference in their lives. We and the city can do that efficiently and effectively, and we can partner with the nonprofit sector to provide the service as well. And it only costs about $2.5 million.
That was going to be my question.
Right.
What kind of cost?
Right. It's a really good investment. So we can, we have the opportunity to use that money wisely. And it's common sense. And that's what we need more of.
And that makes sense. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Wes Gullett, a candidate for the mayor for the city of Phoenix. And, of course, we have Chris Gray, and I see Terry Cass in the green room. He'll be in right after this break. Stay tuned.
Hi. How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now, and then uses her own unique 7 steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company, and that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business. 602-750-4518.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is a special edition of the Real Estate Panel starring Chris Gray and Terry Cass. Terry sort of popped in and popped out. He'll pop back in again like
he's
the
He's a busy guy.
The Pillsbury Doughboy, isn't right, that what right. we call him from now on? We will. And, of course, special in-studio guest running for mayor, Wes Gullett. Thank you again for being here. And
well, not too long ago, I could have been a Pillsbury Doughboy, but you know, I've lost 20 pounds on this campaign for mayor, so no longer. My wife's like, "Eat, Santa! Come on,
Santa, eat."
Wes, let me ask you a question. What skills do you believe it takes and experience to become an effective mayor?
Well, I think you've got to be able to work with everybody. You've got to bring people together. And that's not on the council. That's the way it is, you know, because you've got divergent issues and people on the council. Yeah, so you have to bring them together to work together. But you also have to be able to reach out to the whole community. And we have to have conservatives and liberals, people from South Phoenix, people from North Phoenix, all coming together to work, you know, on these problems. Now, they're not all going to win, and we're not going to have some mishmush of stuff. But people need to understand it. I've knocked on doors of city employees that just don't understand the package that they've received. They don't understand that I asked them, you know, well, I took a 3% pay cut. Did you get longevity? Well, yeah, I got longevity. Well, then you actually got a 2% increase. They just don't get it because they don't see it. And no one tells them about it, and it's not part of the, you know, conversation. So I believe in the Chris Christie theory that we've got to have this adult conversation with our employees and with the people to say, look, we just can't afford this anymore.
That makes sense. And well, let's get Terry in on the conversation. Terry Cass, Cassalon Commercial Group, welcome.
Welcome. Thanks.
All right. So you have a question for Mr. West.
Well, yeah. Since I'm in real estate, commercial real estate, I just haven't examined the views that much. What's your views on kind of what's going on with the houses, commercial foreclosures, shadow inventory?
Right.
I mean, Phoenix, yeah. I do almost exclusively all my work in Phoenix.
Well, we've got a big problem. I mean, yeah. When I'm out knocking on doors, I see it, you know, firsthand. There's 3 or 4 or 5 houses on every street that are empty. And you know they've been empty for a while. And we've got to work with our banks to make sure that we don't end up with a blight situation. Across the street from my house, there's a, our neighbor kid had to mow the grass the other day because it was getting out of control. Bank-owned property. You know, we've got to make sure that we're working together as a community with our banks to make sure that they understand that they can't just hold these properties and let them go to blighted and create sore spots in the neighborhood. But and on the commercial side, we've got to turn loose the power of small business to help with get the smaller inventory off of the mark so that we can fill up and then create that pressure to go to the bigger stuff. And the way we do that is, again, with the relationship with the banks. I think we've got to be much more aggressive. We bank $3 billion a year. We've got to be much more aggressive with our banks and telling them what we want. Because right now, a lot of our business is Bank of America. Well, Charlotte's doing fine, but we're not. So what are you going to do for Phoenix? And we've got to press up against these guys hard to get a better deal. And if they don't want to do it, fine, let's go to another bank. Let's go to a community bank that can actually that's keeping the money here and investing in, because community banks are the ones that are actually investing in small business. How do we get our money to them quicker? And I've got a plan for that.
My question, you do have a way? I mean, yeah. If we're sitting with $3 billion in basically a worldwide bank, why is it not in the local banks, which I happen to bank in, and much easier to work with.
Right.
Much and, more accommodating.
And part of that is just breaking down the system. We don't have a procurement code at the City of Phoenix. We need a procurement code so that everybody knows what the rules are in terms of how we purchase goods and services. We don't have that. Every time that a unit of the city goes out for bid, they write their own procurement. We need a standardized, state-of-the-art procurement code so that everybody knows what the rules are. And then that makes it easier for us to go to work with these smaller banks.
Okay.
Then we've also got to have a world-class, efficient permitting system. So when you want to come in and get a building permit, or you want to come in and to expand your business, or you want to come in to get a business license, that we have one-stop shopping, that you have one person that you can talk to, and that one person is in charge of your case. And you don't have to worry and mess with going to 15 different desks to get different permits. You've got a case manager who's going to make that efficient. And that case manager in my system is going to be rewarded and paid based on success. So their objective is to move that through quickly. And our goal needs to be that we're the fastest licensing agency in the country so that we can put up a sign on the front door that says open for business. That says to people, these guys are serious. In Minneapolis, you can get your zoning in 60 days, and if you don't get it in 60 days, you get what you asked for. State law in Minnesota. Guess what? Minneapolis does it in 60 days. Right. And guess what? Businesses go there because they know, boom, 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 you know. Time is money, and we've got to make sure that the city and the bureaucracy and the institution knows that time is money.
So I'll go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was going to say, and, you know, it's funny that places such as these large banks have no sense of urgency for that. You know, I'm a lender, a banker broker, a small banker broker, which in this market typically tends to be better because I can do things that this place don't and this place does and this one won't and this one will. So I can send it to all the different places. But the point is so you get a house, you get a person that finally finds the house they want, and then it takes the bank, the selling bank, a week, 3 weeks, a month, 3 months to say whether or not they'll even accept your offer. And then half the time they come back with some silliness about, oh, well, we want $2,000 more. Oh, well, or they're not going to fix the roof that's falling in, and you have a buyer. But at the same time, you can't get a loan for the house. So it's like, what do you mean you're not going to fix the roof? How is somebody supposed to borrow?
Right.
So
right.
So how is it that they have no sense of urgency?
Well, and and I think that starts from the beginning, and it starts with leadership. That we have to have a sense of urgency, because what in this new world that we're operating in since 2008, when Lehman Brothers failed, the world changed. Right. We all changed the way we do business. Right. We tightened our belts and we prayed a lot more, and we looked inside to see how we could be more efficient. The city hasn't come to that conclusion yet. They've cut around the edges. They've eliminated a lot of empty spots, but they haven't fundamentally figured out that it's a new world. And we've got to do that, and we've got to have a sense of urgency. Then when we start doing it ourselves, these other guys are going to catch on.
That's kind of where I was getting at, and I guess I always make a short story long. My wife hates that. But that was kind of...
She's online one, by the way.
She's like, Chris, you didn't even ask what you... That's kind of my point, is as a city, can a huge city... I mean, everybody's, you know... All right, so a huge city, can a huge city, the people in charge of that city, go to the B of A's or... Well, you know what? I retract the B of A thing. Go to these larger lenders, whatever, whoever they are, and say, look, where are these ghost properties? Or, you know, you need to upkeep these homes. You know, start getting them sold. Stop with the taking 3 months to even accept it. Can a city like cities in Arizona go, hey, look, you know what? We're done. We're going to start charging you. Like the HOA increases my fees because of all the vacant homes. So now they're not getting the fees. The houses aren't being upkept. So all the people in the homes are HOA fees. So now what can the large cities do to...
We've got to have a conversation, but second, okay, let's have a plan. Here's what we're going to do to fix this problem, and here's what we want to accomplish. And you guys tell us how you can help, and then we're going to look to hold your feet to the fire to do it. Mm-hmm. And we've got some tools in the toolbox that we may need to implement to do that. But I don't want to, because I want to work with you, because I'm a private sector guy. I want to work with you before we have to bring out the tools. But let's get this going. Let's have a sense of urgency. Let's move these properties. But at the same time, we've got to be careful that we don't have the RTC sell-off like we did before, you know, where we move everything at such a low rate that it destroys the entire market.
Right.
Because if they have the capacity to hold them, as long as we've got a plan on how to make sure that they don't turn a good neighborhood into a blighted one.
Well, the thought is now is that there's such a small supply of homes left on the market. I mean, I know several. I mean, I work with like 30, 40 agents that are like, there are just not enough homes listed for people. I mean,
Well, people are scared about the price that they're getting, you know. I mean, if you wanted to sell your house right now, you'd be nervous about it.
I'm talking about the shadows, supposedly shadow market, ghost market, or whatever. I don't think that they would have to dump them at some crazy astronomical low prices. I think they could sell them at what the rest are selling for or more if they would paint it or something or just do something.
Right.
But
right.
Terry.
Well, we're going to have enough time to...
Yeah.
I'd like to discuss marijuana dispensaries.
Oh, well, maybe we should take a break on that one. We could use a break after that one. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion with Wes Gullett, running for the City of Phoenix Mayor. This is exciting. Of course, at 3 o'clock, we're going to have a debate with, of course, Wes Gullett, Jennifer Wright, and Anna Brennan. And we'll talk about medical marijuana dispensaries. We'll talk about that right after these weeks.
At Beerham Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerham Baum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is an expanded version, I should say, of the real estate panel starring Terry Cass and Chris Gray. And, of course, we're honored to have a candidate for the City of Phoenix, Mayor Wes Gullett, in studio. Of course, we ended the break with a very interesting almost question, medical marijuana dispensaries. Terry, go for it.
Well, since I have somewhat of an interest in this, but two questions.
You should clarify what interest you have in that.
Well, that's okay.
Okay.
One question is, what's your opinion, your political opinion of, you know, of medical marijuana dispensaries? I'm not saying that it should be in because it was voted in, but right. What's your view in? And then what's your view on what's going on with Tom Horn and Governor Brewer kind of delaying opening them up by raising questions of issues with the federal law, which I believe was done because both of them are publicly announced they don't want marijuana dispensaries, and it was voted in, and this was kind of their way of getting around it. Again, I can't prove it, but that's what's out on the street.
I oppose the initiative because I thought it was ill-conceived, and there have been a lot of problems with it in other places, similar to what's going on now. So now we've got – it's legal, but it's not legal, you know, and we're fighting in the courts, and we've got a lot of lawsuits, and it's costing us a lot of money. And having teenage daughters, you know, there's enough challenges for them without that one as well. So that said – this battle about where to put them, you know, is a frustrating, constant battle in government because when we don't want to enforce the laws, we sue somebody. It ends up costing us millions of dollars in legal fees, you know, like the 1070 thing. You know, we're not going to enforce 1070. When you start picking and choosing laws that you're going to enforce or not enforce, and everybody's guilty of it. The conservatives are guilty of it. The liberals are guilty of it. Everybody, you know, because – and what we ought to do is look at the law and enforce it the way that it's intended to be enforced. And that goes for 1070. That goes for the medical marijuana issue. And stop picking and choosing which laws we want to – because it sends the wrong message to everybody, including the police, including the enforcement agencies, including our kids, including our adults. And so – I feel your frustration about, you know, that we've got this law and we can't implement it because everybody, you know, it's so murky and everybody's goal is to confuse the issue.
Now, let me follow that up. Personal view aside, I don't even think I voted for it. But the question is, it was voted by the public. So no matter what my view was or your view was, it was a majority vote by the voters of Arizona, which voted in the legalities of medical marijuana, and all the way up to the governors, I would think, different than SB 1070. Was that initiated? I don't remember.
It was passed by the legislature.
Okay, that's a little different. Legislature, small group of people want to put a law in, I could understand trouble. The voters of Arizona voted it in, that politicians' views or not, and I have a teenage daughter, it is a legal thing.
They actually have the same standing. They're exactly the same kind of laws.
Right, but it shouldn't.
But, well.
That's my view.
Yeah.
If the voters voted in, to me that's a referendum.
Let me give you an example of something that I have a record on in terms of voting. the legislature passed fireworks laws. The city of Phoenix came up and said, we're going to change the way, we're going to disregard the law, we're going to zone them out of existence, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that and I thought, look, the law is clear. We can't do this. And they said, well, we'll take it up with the law department and they can. And I said, it's clear that this is the law. And all we're doing is buying ourselves a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. And then that we're going to have to pay for the lawsuit and we're going to have to do all these other things. It doesn't make sense.
And look like a joke to everybody else. Everybody you talk to, they think it's a joke.
And the same thing, you know, with the medical marijuana dispensaries. Okay, the people passed it. Now we've got this issue. It's a difficult one. Let's work through it. Let's solve the problem.
Right.
Instead of creating more problems, more costs, and all that, and employing a bunch of lawyers so that we can battle it out in the courts. And my view of the world is we got to solve problems. You bring us a problem, let's solve it. Instead of blaming it on somebody else, trying to figure out the political solution, let's put politics aside, let's solve problems, let's get our people back to work, and let's create a vibrant city. That's what I want to do. And I think that, you know, you're bringing a problem, we need to focus on what's the solutions to it.
All right.
Well, that makes sense, and solution approaches seem to me very reasonable rather than prolonging it. And like you said, it gets all convoluted, and then next thing you know, it's costing everyone tons of money. There's a couple things you said I notated right here is that you mentioned leadership, and you know, that is so huge, and I think we have fewer and fewer great leaders in the world these days. Also, what you were talking about, it seemed to me the flavor of your conversation about you being the mayor is really changing the culture so much, pretty much. And also implementing best practices. It reminded me of Lean Six Sigma TQM. And talk a little bit about that, because that is what's needed everywhere, just the city of Phoenix.
Right.
Every government, everywhere, probably in the world.
Right. And they're everywhere. These best practices are everywhere. We see them in our own neighborhoods that we've done some. We have the world's greatest garbage collection in the city of Phoenix. People come from all over the world to see how we do it. World class, working great. How do we implement best practices in other areas so that we can have the most success? How do we make sure that we have a police department that is run as efficiently as possible? With the most police officers on the street fighting crime, engaged in the community, working on broken window policing, there are other places that are doing better than we are, and we need to look at those best practices and bring them to Phoenix. New York City has a really great program. It's called a 311 number. You dial 311, you get an operator at the city of New York. You tell them what their problem is. They type it into a computer. The computer Ask Jeeves, gives you an answer, and they say, here's the solution to the problem, here's what you need to do, here's how we're going to do it. As opposed to you looking at your water bill and that 250 telephone numbers that you have on their bulletin board, you know, instead of trying, oh, no, I lost my list, I don't know where to call. You dial 311, you get somebody, they tell you what the solution is. That's what we need to do. We can partner with a technology provider. ASU is using 25% solar energy to power ASU right now, and they're moving ahead. The West Campus is going to be totally powered by solar power. We could run the light rail with solar power. It costs us less money. We reduce our liability on increasing power costs in the future. We just need to say, yes, we can, and let's go do it, and let's figure out how to do it efficiently and use the skill sets that we have right here in the community to get the job done. And now, that's what leadership is all about, having big ideas and going and getting them.
If they implemented the solar with the rail, then they could just attach that to the new SkyRail. And, I mean, because it's supposedly like 2025 or something like that, there's going to be all these new rails going in and out of the airport and all over the place. And would be hugely planning for the future.
Yeah, and how do we lower our costs, our future liabilities? Because if we can do that, if we can lower costs, we can invest in other things, or we can give the money back to the people so that they have it in their pockets and they're spending it in a wise way.
So, the, you know, there's really two aspects with Lean Six Sigma and total quality management. Usually people focus on the efficiency part, the system, the structure, you know, eliminating cycle time and lead time and so on. But there's also the people element, which I don't think a lot of people focus in on. So the analogy is this. You can build a great race car, and that would be Lean Six Sigma, you know, the, just an efficient, amazing race car. But how about training the driver?
Right.
A lot of people
right.
don't do
exactly.
that. Talk about that for a few minutes, and I think then Jennifer Wright will probably be in.
I've got, I have a proposal to create a leadership academy in the city of Phoenix for our employees, for the people who volunteer, so that they understand the value of performance-based pay. They understand the value of efficiencies. They understand training the race car driver so that we can be the most efficient entrepreneurial city government in the world. And if we, but we've got to start, you know, we've got to reward our guys for going through the training and so that they understand the values and the value propositions that we're doing in the city, and the boards and commission people know the conflict of interest law. They understand what they need to do and how they need to do it, and they can run a good and efficient meeting, because that's one of the key things to these volunteer organizations. If you've got a chairman who can run a good meeting, it makes the whole thing work better. Those are the kinds of things that we need to do. We need to train that race car driver so that when we give them this efficient, wonderful system, they can get the job done. And that's what, one of the things they did in New York City with this 311 thing. The operators understand how to use the system.
Right.
And that's really important.
You know, and part of this of training, you can get people in. I mean, they're in right now, you know, city officials and so on. You could train them. But also, how about on the front end, selection criteria during the hiring practices becomes very important, too. Talk a little bit about the beginning of the whole structure.
We ought to have we have to be really careful in our hiring, because we're hiring people for the best job in town. With the pay package, the health insurance, the retirement benefits, the longevity pay, the merit pay that we have, it is a fantastic job. So we ought to be able to pick the cream of the crop and make sure that the people that we're getting are going to stay there for a long term. Now, I'm going to change a little of that. It's not. We need to be much more realistic in the way we approach our employees. It's got to be much more competitive with the private sector, because right now we're paying more, have better benefit packages than the private sector, which you mentioned about salaries coming down and people right. taking less money and a lot less in benefits. The city employees, actually, that's going the other direction. So we need to get a handle on that. I'm sure Jennifer will talk about management bloat that we've got to address. There's no question about that. Our managers manage 6 people on average. Move it to 7, it's 14% savings, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Nice. You know, I
very quick analogy.
So we've got to do a much better job. But on the hiring part of it, people need to understand that we are a city that is headed in the right direction. We are an entrepreneurial place. We're going to be successful, and we're going to create an entrepreneurial attitude in our community that's going to keep the private sector going faster and faster.
And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion, although we're probably going to have Jennifer Wright in. I don't know, Chris, you could see if she's in the green room. Wes Gullett, thank you so much. You'll be back at 3
yep.
to join in on the debate. And this is Breakthrough Thinking. I'm Dave Isaac. Of course, we have Chris Gray in the studio along with Terry Cass. The real estate panel will be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement? offering compromise or not currently collectible status. Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now and then uses her own unique 7-steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company, and that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business. 602-750-4518.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the real estate panel. Yes, and it's an expanded episode, we'll call, of the real estate panel, starring Chris Gray and Terry Cass. And, of course, we just had Wes Gullett. He'll be back at 3 for the square off, we'll call it, the debate of the century. And, of course, joining us now is, no, it's not Jennifer Wright, but it is Anna Brennan. How are you, Anna?
The lovely Anna Brennan.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You need the mic. Okay.
That was my fault.
Lovely Anna Brennan. Yes, we could say that. Can we say that?
I think we can say that.
Anyway, so welcome to the show. You're going to be here at 3 with the great debate. I think Jennifer will be here by then. Wes Gullett is already here in the green room. So, Anna, the countdown begins. A week left, less than a week. How do you feel?
I'm excited, and I keep telling people that I want to win it, and I'm going to win it in August. I'm not going to a runoff election. We're going to win it August 30th.
Wow, that's confidence. Terry, you have it looks like you have a question.
Well, I mean, we don't have enough time to hit all the stuff. I'll be honest, I don't know much. I'd like to hear kind of just an overall,
sure,
your views.
Sure, sure.
I haven't been paying that much attention, mm-hmm, enough, but...
Well, just so you know, the reason I'm running is because I saw the cast of characters that were on the ballot, and I call them cast of characters.
And you're going to have an opportunity to have a couple of them here at 3.
Right, and I was very disenchanted, as many of our taxpayers are. And what I'm seeing is that we are going, by the way, as the federal government is going, so is city government going. Tax and spend, spend and tax. And a lot of the citizens are so disenchanted that they've decided not to partake in the process. Yesterday I was at AZ Rentals to get some propane for my RV, and I said to a gentleman, I said, sir, I'm running for mayor. Here's my card. I don't vote. I said, what? He goes, I refuse to vote. I said, but look at me. I said, here's my phone number. Check out my website. He goes, no. So what happened was I went outside to pay for the propane, and I came back, and I said, you know, my children and I were just in Germany. We visited the concentration camps, and I just want to remind you that when good people do nothing, evil wins. Take that and think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the truth. And we appreciate all your hard work, and we're glad to see, you know, a person, you know, one of us, you know, like our neighbor, running for mayor, and I truly appreciate it.
And I invite you to go on my website, abformayor.com, because we're streaming live, and I'm going out reaching out to those people that refuse to even join in the process. What did they say? One person said, I'm not even going to give those goofs the satisfaction.
You know what, Anna, during the debate, we won't have much time for this. So mm-hmm. why don't you tell us how you got to where you're at in life, who you actually are, and why you're running, what actually makes you think you're the mayor-elect, why you should be that person. Start with
I am very, very right. I came up through the hard knocks of life. I am an immigrant. I came here when I was 7 years old. I watched my father work three jobs, and at the very early age of 10 years old, when the riots were starting in the neighborhood I grew up in Milwaukee, my dad had to take us out of the public school system because even with a third grade education, he knew that they were broken and they weren't even safe. So he took out another job, and we started going to parochial schools since then. I can tell you that as a 12-year-old going into high school, I would sit there and look at the paper and say, Dad, we can get out of the wrong side of the tracks. I can work. I started working at 14, and in my head I started saying, I can make this much money. I can help make the mortgage. Can we buy this house? I had a dream to move up. And even at that young age, I knew that in America it was possible. And so fast forward, I was the first one to go to college out of my family. My parents have a third grade education. I am the middle of five, and usually the middle person has to really fight to get attention because I wasn't the oldest girl or boy or the youngest girl or boy. And so I had to fight to get attention. It's made me very, very strong. Going through college, after graduating with a degree, a Bachelor of Science in Nursing, I moved on. I became a single parent at the very young age of 24 because I did get married to leave the house. I come from strong, traditional Italian background. And so I knew as soon as I graduated from college, which, by the way, I did finance myself just with grants and working three jobs while I was going to school. I knew that once school was over, I had to move back home. So I got married right away because that's the Italian way. So within 5 years, I was divorced and I had an 8-month-old son. And I'm accustomed to working two or three jobs. So I was working as a nurse, and then I got a job in the airline industry. I became a flight attendant, and as I was flying around and hitting all these little ethnic places in the city, Little Italy in New York, Chinatown in San Francisco, when I came back home, I'm like, I want one of these in my neighborhood. And so the saga started, and I opened my first restaurant. And that's where it's ridiculous what people have to go through to start a business. Mm-hmm. If it had been up to my city elected officials, I would have never opened my restaurant. My restaurant became the jewel. It was a jewel of the city. And I fought for a liquor license after that. Then when I expanded from a 50-seat little cafe, I bought an actual building, and I expanded to over 100 seating area. And then I had the shenanigans of the Historical Preservation Society, and I just got a bill today that it was $150 to keep my planters outside on the sidewalk, which, by the way, if the sidewalk is broken, I have to repair it, but if I want to put beautiful planters, then I have to pay the city money.
A fee. There's a fee for everything.
Yes.
You know, it's so the city's that, HOA fee.
Yes.
What that is.
I feel that I can be the voice of the taxpayer. I am an immigrant. I think I can bring so many people together, and I am. Yesterday we stopped at a Hispanic neighborhood, and I jumped out of the car and I said, hi, are you voters? My name's Anna Brennan. The first question they asked me, are you for that, and they couldn't get it out. I said, SB 1070? And I said, yeah. I said, well, actually, I am for that. And let me tell you why you need to be for that. It's all about educating the public, because I think our current politicians are using these issues to divide us, and the time has come to stop. And I know I'm telling you a lot. It's a lot for you to remember, so I'm going to remind you to go to abformayor.com because it does tell my life story, and it shows all these people that I'm engaging. And those are the people that I'm hoping are going to go out and vote for me, not the 74,000 that everyone is fighting over. I want to get the 1,400,000 that refuse to give the process a satisfaction.
Well, we have about maybe 3 minutes left before the debate starts, before our next commercial. However, tell us a little bit about that, the obstacles that you went through as a business owner, some of the things that you would eliminate in maybe 3 minutes or less, because I think this is important. A lot of people want to start businesses. They have no clue what they're getting into, the bureaucratic red tape. What about that can you speak of in the next couple
minutes? I would say add or eliminate.
Add or eliminate, exactly. Yeah. While you hear the other politicians, and I'm not a politician, I'm a taxpayer, talk about getting all these efficiency studies going, and we're going to put this task force doing this. You know what? Anna Brennan can read, and I have a brain. So we're going to sit down, and we will go through the permitting books. We will go through the regulations, and the ones that don't make sense, we are going to eliminate together, because I know what it takes to get a restaurant, any kind of business off the ground. And what it takes is less permitting, less regulations, and a game plan. I would like, and I hate to give, sorry, Todd Sanders, thank you for dissing me. He is the CEO of the Greater Chamber of Phoenix, Greater Phoenix Chamber of Commerce. But I commend him for saying that, you know, small businesses are the bread and butter of Arizona. So he recommends, and I agree with him, a one-stop shop online, and we could have a one person also at the office for people that aren't comfortable with dealing online. But it would list step by step, you know, short of a business plan, what it would take for different industries to get into their own little their own little business, because you know everyone has a dream of being their own employer.
Right. That's awesome. I appreciate it. Are we out of time?
No, we actually have about 3 more minutes.
We do.
But I like what you said. Oh, go ahead. You have another comment.
Well, I just, and this is one of my pet peeves are that people get, they get pushed from one department to one department, and they never get an answer. And this is what clearly sets me apart from all the other candidates. I believe that city government should be owned by the taxpayer. And that's why I am the only candidate that has my cell phone number. I want people in our citizens of Phoenix to be able to say, I have my mayor's cell phone number, direct speed dial, 480-280-9238. And I've been giving my number for the last 2 months, and I can tell you I love it. When people call and they go, is this you? Oh, my gosh. And it's amazing. They're looking for a role model. They'll take anything, and I think I would be a good role model.
Do you feel that our city council and mayor have done a decent job with running the city thus far?
I'm not trying to take jabs at people, but no, where's our bus system? We don't even have a transit, and that is so sad. You go downtown and you have parking meters, $1.50. That's ridiculous. That does not help the taxpayer. The other day I was downtown Wednesday. Dead, so dead you could hear a pin drop. There were two young men that happened to jaywalk, $150 ticket. Is that how we're promoting downtown, by harassing people? That's where we've lost common sense. Now, had it been a really, really busy day in the middle of the afternoon and these boys happened to stop traffic, okay, there was no one there. There was not any reason to give a jaywalking ticket $150.
See, that's where the police are taught the flavor of the law. And so having been to two different police academies and worked with two different police departments and deciding I really didn't like that job, but where police officers are taught there's the law and there's the flavor of the law.
And
before you comment, we're going to have to go on a break because it is now almost 3 o'clock. We're stay tuned for the debate. Wes Gullet, Jennifer Wright, Anna Brennan in studio all together. Terry, this is going to be amazing. It's going to be like the OK Corral. I can't wait. We'll be right back.